Welcome to Commons and Chronicles, the podcast where we talk about all the best Creative Commons and reusable open game license content. If you need resources for your creative writing, game design, or you just love lore, Commons and Chronicles is for you. Hey everyone, this is Klaatu, and you're listening to Commons and Chronicles, or is it Chronicles and Commons? Nobody knows for sure. This is another entry into my Barsoom series. Barsoom being Mars. Mars in the Edgar Rice Burroughs series of novels, commonly known as just the John Carter books, or sometimes you might hear them called the Barsoomian novels, or Barsoom books, or Barsoom novels. No one really knows what it's called, but because back then I don't think they really had proper series. They just called it, I don't know, a book with the same character in it. And it's Edgar Rice Burroughs, and some of the novels have fallen into public domain, not all of them. So I'm covering only content that is in the public domain. Now, if you've never read the books, you're gonna... I try to avoid spoilers here, but I'm talking very specifically about a lot of the details of the books. So there are bound to be spoilers. So if you've never read the books, just know that you're in dangerous territory here, because there will probably be spoilers. In this episode, not so much, maybe. But definitely as of the next Martian race. Oops, I've just spoiled something, actually. As far as you know, there are only two Martian races, green and red. I won't say anything more. I'm just saying, after this episode, and possibly during this episode, there could be spoilery types of information that, if you've never read the book and you want it to be a surprise, you should stop listening to this now. Okay, so in the previous episode covering Barsoom, I spoke about the green Martians, and they are the kind of the quintessential Martians. They are the green, well, they're the green, not the little green men, they're the big green men. Four arms, two legs, tusks out of the side of their heads, really alien creatures. They lay eggs, they do all kinds of weird things. They're the Martians. Now, they are presented a little bit as I said in the episode, a little bit akin to maybe the Fremen or the Sand People of Star Wars. The Fremen of Dune, Sand People of Star Wars, Tusken Raiders. So they're a little bit of the savage race. Although when you meet them and experience them, they don't actually seem really all that savage at all. So it's very much from a different perspective that they are presented as kind of a quote-unquote savage race. And that other perspective is that of the Red Martians. The Red Martians, John Carter meets a little bit later in his travels, and they are very human-like. They're normal humans from on the outward appearance, aside from the fact that their skin is reddish. It is stated somewhere that it's not literal red, that it's more just kind of a reddish tint to the skin tone, but apparently it's strong enough such that John Carter does not resemble them. So it's a little bit unclear as to how red they are. In the book, when I was reading it, the first book, certainly, I always kind of considered them to be quite red. But I guess there are arguments about how red they are. Either way, the human-like nature of these Martians is mostly outward only. I mean, they have a code all their own. So certainly they don't act or seem or feel like Earthmen, Earthlings. They're very distinct to themselves. They have their own systems of beliefs and their own code of honor and so on. And some of those codes of honor are more or less global. We'll talk about that in a moment. We've already talked a little bit about it in the Green Martian episode. Others are maybe unique to their own society. They are also they lay eggs. The females lay eggs. They do not give live birth. They lay eggs that are incubated for about 5 Martian years before they hatch, and then when they hatch, they are fully developed, except they're just small versions of themselves. And in about 7 or 8 years later, they grow into a full Martian. The red Martians don't really wear clothes. It's not a thing on Mars. Clothes don't really exist. And as I said on the Green Martian episode, it is mentioned very frequently that there's a lot of ornamentation. And certainly in an RPG, I've never really felt like it was super appropriate to talk too much about the lack of clothing around the gaming table. It just kind of mixed company kind of precludes that. So I think that it can be thought of in Red Martian culture, and this is supported by the original art on the books, on the dime novel covers. There's a lot of ornamentation happening to such a degree that lots of straps and large kind of pieces of metal or stone or leathers or whatever that would probably cover parts. So while they might not be called clothing, I think that there's a definite argument for the idea that if not Edgar Rice Burroughs, then certainly the artists doing cover art, admittedly constrained by censors of the time, probably envisioned something. Maybe, again, you wouldn't call it clothing, but they would be ornamentation pieces that would support various body parts and sort of keep everything in place whilst, I don't know, slaughtering other Martian races. So that's just kind of my take on it. I don't know what Edgar Rice Burroughs obviously thought about it, but I think you can definitely, once again, just kind of thinking of something obvious to most modern listeners. If you think of the clothing and the style of Jabba the Hutt's little palace, I think that would be very much within the Barsoom kind of style. I think you could absolutely argue that Star Wars, when creating Jabba's entourage, accidentally created the visual reference for Barsoom. I think that definitely works. Of course, in your own games and your own imagination, you can think of it as you will. But I've always thought that was a good way to go. So there are a couple of different major cities in the Red Martian civilization. And the Red Martian civilization is spread far across the planet. There are certain places they will not go. But they do have a bunch of cities that are quite popular and well-known and quite powerful. And when Green Martians dwell in cities, which I think I mentioned this last time, when they dwell in cities, it's usually ruined cities. Cities that have been recovered from conquest or from cataclysm of Mars, as Mars is in the series, a dying world. The major kingdom in the books that you'll hear about, because it is John Carter's adopted home, is Helium. 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 It is ruled at the time of John Carter by Jeddak Tardos Mors. And remember, a Jeddak is the highest ruler on Barsoom, or not on Barsoom, but within the Barsoom society. There isn't one Jeddak over all of Mars, but one Jeddak per kingdom or per city. Helium, in fact, consists of two separate cities. There's Lesser Helium and Greater Helium. Greater Helium being home to the Jeddak of Helium. It has one of its most striking features is its Scarlet Tower, where the royal court is located. It needs to be well protected, and it is. It is, from what I understand, removed from the easier access that, for instance, Lesser Helium has. Lesser Helium is distinguished by a yellow tower, which is ruled by its Jed, Mors Kajek. Mors Kajek being important for really his daughter, who we'll hear about very soon. Lesser Helium happens to be located around several rivers. There's a whole system of rivers that go all around the Lesser City. You can get there over the ocean, or over the rivers, rather. The only problem is that the rivers go through the Green Martian territory. So if you're, for instance, escaping from the Green Martians, the way John Carter was when he first went to Helium, you'd have to brave your captors as you travel down the river. So Helium is ruled by Tardos Mors, as I've said. He's an important figure. He's kind of the leader of the Red Martians that we get a lot of time with through John Carter. But the perhaps more important one for us, and arguably John Carter himself, is Kajek Mors. Mors Kajek, rather. And he is important because he is the Jed of Lesser Helium and the father of Dejah Thoris. Dejah Thoris is a Red Martian who is the crown princess of Helium and who falls in love with and marries John Carter. She gives birth to Carthoris, who is the son of John Carter, who doesn't know John Carter for the first portion of his life because of some drama that occurs that I just won't go into for fear of spoilers, and it's not really relevant to understanding Red Martians. Helium is a little bit unique because they are actually allies with some of the Green Martians, and that's not typical. But through John Carter and Tars Tarkas' friendship, the Green Martians of the tribe of Tars Tarkas and Helium itself become allies. And in fact, they go on a couple of expeditions together, so they're solidly allies. Interestingly, not an ally of Helium, at first at least. I mean, it would depend on when you're visiting, but initially, when John Carter shows up, the enemy of Helium, the long-standing enemy of Helium, is a place called Zodanga. That's Zodanga. Zodanga. This city is a similarly fortified city to Helium. These are not, you know, these really are more like kingdoms or castles almost. They're well protected, both Helium, well, Lesser and Greater Helium, and Zodanga are quite well protected, strategically placed, and in respect to Helium and Zodanga, thoroughly at odds with one another. The Zodangans are notably more imperialistic than the Heliumites, while the Heliumites are definitely not democratic by any means. I mean, they have a clear structure based on warlords, which just the same everywhere, you know, the same with the Green Martians. A Jeddak is appointed by killing the previous Jeddak, potentially. You can inherit it if nobody kills you, you can pass the title down, but there's the the exception, the exemption of becoming a Jeddak by slaying someone. That's a thing. But the Zodangan society just feels a little bit more regimented, a little bit more fascist, I would say, without being full-on fascism. It's a little bit harsher, a little bit more martial. I guess that's the best word for it. Now, they have a deep-rooted hatred for green Martians, and so much so that they go out into the wilderness and actively seek to destroy the green Martian incubators. Remember, the green Martians, they take all of the tribe's eggs to a common location and kind of hide them in a warm, secure place, and they check in on them and make sure that they're okay. But the Zodangans actively go out and seek to destroy the nurseries, which I feel is pretty harsh. There are many, many red Martian kingdoms and cities, states to play around with. You get the idea that the red Martians are pretty widespread, and because they typically inhabit cities and places of secure strategic placement, they tend to be pretty easy to spot. So unlike the green Martians, who are just kind of out there, and you assume that they're out there, but you can't really put your finger on where they are, the red Martians it's well known where they are, because they don't really hide it. They make a big deal of it. So there are, yes, probably really too many to cover. I mean, there are just cities all over the place. There's Pundal, there's Duhor, there is a specific, an important one called Ptarth, Ptarth. And the reason that this is important is because it is home to the princess of Ptarth, who's named Thuvia. Thuvia, Thuvia, is someone that we meet early on and then meet again later in her own book called Thuvia, Princess of Mars. Or maybe it's just Thuvia of Mars. Either way, Thuvia of Mars was the first book that I read in the John Carter series, which is kind of funny because it's not the one with John Carter in it. It's actually more about Carthoris and Thuvia than it is anyone else, but I didn't really care, and I didn't know any better, and it was very difficult to tell which book to start with. It was quite none of them really sound like a first book. It starts with Princess of Mars, and then goes to God of Mars, and then Thuvia, and you can't really figure out which is which. So sitting in my grandfather's workshop, where he kept all of his pulp fiction books, sitting in there trying to figure out where to start was always kind of a mystery to me, and Thuvia seemed like a good one to start with. It had a cool-looking girl on it with a big cat, and I figured, yeah, that seems like a good place to start. And it was. It was an okay book. Now, Thuvia doesn't really get, upon rereading the book, I don't feel like she gets, she doesn't quite fulfill all of the expectation and promise that you sense she could fill when you first encounter her. She is a mysterious princess. You don't really know who or what she is or why she's there, why she's significant. Turns out that she has been kidnapped by a ship bearing Heliumite markings, flags, whatever. So it's kind of a setup that she is captured apparently by Helium, and Ptarth and Helium are on brink of war as a result. But more importantly, Thuvia has the strange ability to telepathically communicate and, I guess, arguably control or maybe strongly suggest to wild beasts to do her bidding. Now, in my memory, this was a much more prominent feature of Thuvia than when I actually reread for this series. It was just barely mentioned. It came into play like one time, and then even then it was pretty casual. It was just kind of a brief mention of, oh, by the way, I used this ability to keep us safe. In my memory, she had a cadre of animals, of wild Martian beasts, which we'll get into in a later episode, surrounding her at all times, attacking anyone who defies her. Such is not the case of the writing. However, I think it begs to be non-canon. It begs to be something that happens. Thuvia should be a beast master or beast mistress who controls all of the wild animals and yeah, kills anyone who crosses her path. Crosses her path in a threatening way, not just anyone who she encounters. And I think that would be a great ability for a character to have in that world, because there's no reason to believe that Thuvia is the only one. I don't think it's all red Martians by any means. I don't think it would be a common thing, but I think it would be something that maybe is some strain of an ancient Martian power surviving in certain individuals. Begs to be a thing. So that's Thuvia. She is a red Martian from Petarth. There's Deja Thoris, a red Martian from Helium. There is Helium itself. There's lots of different cities, which I could go into, but there's not all that much data on many of them. So really the thing to know is that red Martians dwell in great cities. Think of the sort of biggest science fantasy metropolis that you can think of and make that your city. And keep in mind that the Red Martians, while fairly, civilized, there's really not a whole lot of unification happening. Most of the unification happening is done through sort of favors and debts and honor. If someone does something to help you, then your city suddenly is friends with that person's city. But if something happens later that goes against something, then the tides will turn. So it's an ever fluctuating kind of very disparate relationship between all of the cities. So you can only really be sure of a city, of the city that you are in, whether or not you are going to be, if you're visiting a city, whether or not if you're a friend when you go in, you could be an enemy by the time you leave. You never know. You just don't know what kind of outside forces are occurring. So let's talk a little bit about technology now. The Red Martian society is a lot more technologically advanced than, for instance, the Green Martians. The Green Martians, we know that they have a pretty good handle on the lay of the land and the resources of the land. They, for instance, know that certain plants provide a milk that you can drink and sustain yourself. They know where to go to be protected by the harsh Martian environment. The Red Martians probably deep down know some of the same kinds of things. I mean, if you find the right person, but primarily they rely on technology, whether that technology is just modern architecture and being able to build cities, or for instance, airships. Yes, Red Martians have airships, like flying airships. They also have a monorail system, so underground monorail, like a subway. So the airship angle is introduced pretty early on in the first book. There are some pretty fantastic airship battles in the first book, and it continues throughout. It's something that you'll experience throughout a couple of the books, and it's really, really exciting. complete with people falling over the sides and boarding another airship in midair. It is, once again, to use an analogy or a reference that most modern listeners will be able to understand, if you think of the skiff battle in Return of the Jedi, it's like that, except more of it. And just for the record, I do not believe that it's just a chance, by chance, that there are so many reference points between Star Wars, or at least things on Tatooine from Star Wars, that you can point to John Carter as kind of, not analogies, but like reference points. I do not believe that's a coincidence. And there's probably some that I'm missing in Dune conceptually. It's just that Dune has such a rich kind of culture and world building in ways that Star Wars doesn't quite have, that it's a little bit difficult to divorce Dune from Dune, for me at least. But yeah, there's a lot of reference points in Star Wars from that may arguably come straight from John Carter. So the airships are a feature that stand out quite strongly in John Carter, and I think if you were to play in that world, you would really be able to emphasize the airship culture. It's primarily naval. It is primarily militaristic, the airships. You don't get the sense that they are that there's a very popular kind of, you know, passenger flight industry there. It does seem to be militaristic. But then again, the Red Martian relationships with one another and with other Martians are militaristic. So it's a little bit hard to take militarism out of Martian culture as a whole. Now, this is a point of some confusion for me, and that is the nature of weaponry on Mars. Not only where the weaponry is manufactured, but also who has access to it. Or whether it's being manufactured at all. So it's not really super clear from the books where the there are firearms and there are melee weapons in John Carter books. It's not clear. I mean, certainly Green Martians and Red Martians both have firearms. So obviously both cultures have access to these weapons, to the rather advanced weapons, but it's not super clear as to how they get them, whether one of them is manufacturing them and then selling them to the other, which I don't really get the sense of, or whether maybe it's long-forgotten technology before some kind of cataclysmic event on Mars that just keeps getting kind of reused and repaired and reused. So that's not very clear to me as to where they come from, but there is that kind of dualistic ranged weapons, like small arms and guns on the airships, and close combat stuff like swords and knives and daggers and things like that. That said, we do know that there is a science among the Red Martian civilizations. There are psychologists and inventors and mechanists. That there someone's maintaining the atmosphere, the artificial atmosphere chamber that consists of a particularly potent air-producing plant. So there's definitely the awareness of technology and the importance of technology, and there are people within, you know, the royal courts who are scientifically based. So it's a position that is revered enough, at least, to get court, you know, royal court time, and to be on staff within the court. So you do get the sense that there's some kind of culture there of with a scientific background. An analogy that I kind of keep thinking of in my own mind is the Izzet League in Ravnica. They're the sort of the mages they're the inventors. They're responsible, usually through magic, for the beneficial technologies of Ravnica. And that's kind of how I imagine it working in John Carter in John Carter's Barsoom, the Red Martians, sort of having these kind of half mad scientists, half actual inventors coming up with all kinds of technology to serve a very specific purpose. And I can only assume that some of that technology filters out into other societies, just the way things do. A downed airship reverse engineered by a green Martian, for instance. Who knows? So that's the Red Martians. Technologically advanced, or for Mars, I guess. Human-like. More human-like, I guess, than the green Martians. And I don't necessarily mean that as a good thing. I'm just saying they John Carter could be mistaken for a Red Martian. Especially if he puts paint on his skin, red, like a red dye. Very bound to militarism and whatever form of honor that they believe in, and kind of seen as the superior race on Mars. And again, I'm not necessarily saying that is a good thing. I'm just saying that's the way they see themselves. They are, in their own mind, and in the mind of John Carter, because John Carter is a product of his time, he sees them as the dominant race of Mars, and therefore, because might makes right, they must be the ones to fight for. And that's what he ends up doing, for better or for worse. Either way, there's a whole pastiche of Red Martian civilizations out there to play around with. While there is strictly no magic on Mars, there certainly is technology that may as well be magical. And so you could have a lot of fun with the technology of Barsoom, far beyond what is seen in the John Carter books. You could, if you can think of it, and you can think of kind of a science fantasy way to make something happen, then there's not really any reason to think that a Red Martian scientist would not have thought of that and invented it, at least a prototype for a campaign. That's the Red Martians of Barsoom. I hope that was more or less clear. Trying to discuss them without giving too many spoilers away, and also trying to mitigate what I'm speaking of between what's actually in public domain and what's not in public domain can be tricky as well. So that's what I've got for the Red Martians. In the next episode, or in the next Barsoom episode, we will go over maybe another race. Who knows? Maybe there's another race. I mean, there's not, right? It's just green and red Martians. But who knows? Maybe there is. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time. That's it for this week's episode. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Klaatu. You can reach me via email at klaatu@member.fsf.org. You can also usually catch me in IRC as not Klaatu. I'm on the Freenode network. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.